Chapter 12. After a few more long, delicious climaxes with Batari, her pussy was just gushing with my cum, and I knew there was no way she could take another round with me. So the two of us conked out in the bed of the fertility hut, and the next thing I remembered was the warm red glow of the sun as its light shone in through the window at the other side of the dwelling. It was a beautiful sight to take in, and I felt like the sunrise's crimson glimmer hung over the entire savannah like a blanket of cozy, rosy light. The entire scene was picturesque, and all I wanted to do was lay there and bask in its beauty. However, the Kunag women had other plans.
"Hey!"
Nadir declared, as she beat on the door of the hut rapidly.
"Wake up, guys! I know you probably had an incredible night, but we don't want to be any later than we already were."
Later than we already were? Damn. When Lazan and Nadir said we were going to leave at the first light of dawn, they really meant it. I sat up in the bed and rubbed at my eyes as I tried to get my mind back from its haze. Then I rolled off the mattress, walked over to my discarded clothing, and pulled it groggily back over my flesh.
"Are they serious right now?"
Batari huffed as she sat straight up in bed. "Apparently," I noted as I tied my belt of weapons back around my waist. "They're itching to get going."
"You'd think your crewmates wouldn't be so eager to head out on a suicide mission."
Batari yawned as she started to stand up, but I shook my head and held out my hand to stop her. "Don't worry about it. You can just go back to bed if you want, and I'll get them to stop banging so you can get your beauty sleep."
"Nonsense. Though it may be an ungodly early hour, I'm still the Queen Mother. I need to at least be present to bid farewell to my subjects."
"You sure? Because if I were in your position, I'd be leaping back into bed and not waking up for hours. I still feel drained from last night."
"Was it the fight with the spotted hounds or the sex?"
The rhino woman giggled as she hopped out of bed. "Honestly, it was probably both," I admitted, and my heart skipped a beat as I watched the gray-skinned woman strut over to her clothes. Her figure jiggled in all the right places, and I felt my cock hardening as she bent over to pick up her top and loincloth. Batari then quickly tied off her garments, adjusted them on her body, and smiled. But before I could compliment her beauty, Nadir beat on the door once more.
"Come on, Ben! Lazan and I have already been up for 2 whole hours. Daylight is wasting."
"It's barely even started," I argued through the door. "The sun just came up a few minutes ago."
"That's a few minutes. We won't have against the Scudawar,"
the Kunag woman retorted.
"She does have a point,"
Batari conceded with a laugh. Once both of us were fully clothed, we went over to the door, opened it slowly, and gave Nadir and Lazan the dirtiest looks we could muster. The Kunag women, however, didn't seem to be fazed whatsoever.
"I was wondering if I was going to have to break down the door and pull you out of bed. Everybody else is already waiting."
"Everybody else is awake? I'm sure they were all just as pleasantly surprised as we were by our wake-up call."
"Oh, you guys' response was nothing compared to what the rest of the crew said." "Mira said she was going to cut out my tongue and stick it in a not very pleasant place. Then there were the Chero women, almost all of whom responded with some sort of death threat, including Zamwe, which I was not expecting at all." "Wait, why'd you wake up Zamwe? She's not going on this journey." "I know,"
the raven-haired Kunag woman nodded.
"But we assumed the whole village would want to see us off." "The whole village?"
Batari bemoaned.
"Please don't tell me you woke up every single Chero woman in our village."
"Ah, we tried to,"
Nadir shrugged.
"We are still not sure we got the ones who live up on the higher levels of the building, since we just had to cup our hands over our mouths and yell at them from ground level."
"So, they're all out there waiting for us?"
the white-haired Chero leader questioned.
"Mm-hmm."
Nadir nodded.
"Right now, you two are the only thing between them and going back to bed. I will warn you, though, they're somewhat agitated at the moment."
"I wonder why."
"I really don't know."
The Kunag woman shrugged, and I couldn't tell if she was being playful or not.
"Maybe they just didn't sleep well. Tensions must be really high."
Batari and I exchanged a puzzled glance, but then we began to follow the Kunag woman back to the main section of the village. Nadir walked with a whole lot of pep in her step. Her whole body seemed to bounce happily with each step she took, and her dark tail flicked from side to side as she strode forward. Eventually, she led us to the edge of the village, where the rest of my crewmates were waiting for us. As were several dozen Chero women, all of whom looked like they'd just been dragged out of bed. Several of them had their arms crossed over their chests and frowns on their faces as they annoyedly stomped their feet and rubbed at their eyes. Yikes. this was going to be a really tough crowd.
Great. They really did wake up the whole village.
There they are!
Nima declared with a smile on her face. The tall, red-haired Nirilope woman stood proudly beside the rest of my crew, who all looked like they were ready to go back to bed. Still, it was nice to see at least one of them was enthusiastic about the journey ahead.
Did you two have a good night?
Mira questioned with a knowing smirk.
It's a good thing the fertility hut's so far away. I was worried none of us would be able to sleep with all the sounds that were coming out of there. You heard us?
Batari demanded.
Nah.
Rikuri shook her dark locks.
But I can only imagine the kind of sounds he was getting out of you. I mean, a real man? In the flesh? You'll have to tell me all about it when we get back from our journey. There's no need to wait.
The white-haired leader admitted.
I can tell you on the way.
Rikuri and Ashanti both took a minute to process the information, but then their eyes widened and smiles spread across their faces. Meanwhile, the crowd of Chero women broke out into hushed murmurs.
So, you are going. What made you change your mind?
It's obvious.
Rikuri snorted as she bumped Ashanti's shoulder with her elbow.
Draco Rex's manhood must have been everything she hoped for and more.
That's the understatement of the day.
Lazan purred.
Whatever you think it's like is nothing like that. It's 10 times better.
And it's something you think about all the time?
Nima sighed.
Honestly, I haven't stopped thinking about that night since it happened and fantasizing about how I can make it happen again. That's not the reason I changed my mind.
Batari blurted out as her cheeks flushed darkly.
Not that it wasn't incredible, Ben.
No offense taken. I raised my hands.
Ben!
Lazan teased.
Oh, it must have been good if we're on a first-name basis.
That doesn't mean anything. I'm on a first-name basis with Ben, and we haven't done it yet. Same here.
Honora added softly.
I mean, I call him Draco Rex to be formal since he is my king, but sometimes I like to call him Ben, too. He hasn't tried to impregnate me yet, either.
Yet? I raised my eyebrows at the two women who instantly turned red.
I changed my mind because I realized I needed to be a good leader.
Batari interjected to bring us back on topic.
Yes, I know this mission is dangerous, and there is a very good chance I won't come back. At first, I was worried that if I went, it might deprive the Chero people of their leader. However, I had a realization last night when I was talking to Draco Rex. If I don't go with him on this journey, then your leader is already as good as lost. The Scudoir has been a looming problem for several season cycles, and if we don't take action now, things will only get worse. What kind of a leader would I be if I sat back and did nothing while our brave warriors risked their lives to save us?
The Chero women chattered with each other in hushed whispers. Some of them looked absolutely petrified, while others appeared excited and hopeful.
Well?
Ashanti grumbled as she leaned back atop her aunt.
Don't just sit there, ladies. The Queen Mother has just made a very tough decision and she needs your support.
There was another brief moment of silence, but then the rhino women raised their hands up into the air and unleashed a resounding
Haru!
And they repeated their cheers as they pumped their left fists up into the air in near unison.
Don't celebrate just yet.
Batari just rolled her eyes and then motioned for her people to settle down.
Rikuri and Ashanti were the second and third in line for the succession. Which means, until any of us come back, the duties of the Queen Mother fall on Zakiyu.
Zakiyu was near the front of the crowd, and the brunette Chero blinked repeatedly as she looked around and pointed at herself.
You're giving me full control of the village? Like, I don't have to run any decisions about the flow or infrastructure by anyone else first?
Don't get ahead of yourself.
Batari warned with an amused smirk.
I'm hoping at least one of us three will return unscathed and promptly take over the duties of the Queen Mother once more.
So, what I'm hearing is I need to push through any changes I want to make very, very quickly.
Zakiyu deadpanned.
I'm hoping I won't regret this decision.
The white-haired rhino woman teased.
You won't!
Zakiyu promised, and her smile grew wide for a moment.
It's a great honor to be in the line of succession at all, especially so high up. I won't let you down.
And I promise not to let you down either.
Batari reassured the crowd.
Any of you. We're gonna go out there, kill the Scudoir, and bring prosperity to the Chero people once more.
Cheers and
Haru
rang out across the crowd of the half-asleep rhino women. But then Batari raised her hands to quiet them once again. We should get going, I finally spoke up. I, for one, don't want to be stuck out there in the middle of the savannah when nightfall hits.
Oh, now who's exaggerating about the time of day?
Nadir teased.
Then go we shall.
Batari confirmed.
Zikiu, is my Mirak ready to go?
As always, Queen Mother.
Zikiu bowed.
He's probably somewhere out in the pasture, munching on grass or playing with the others. Shall I go and fetch him for you?
That won't be necessary.
Batari shook her head.
We have to pass by the stables on our way out anyway. Now, shall we?
My friends and I all shared glances before we nodded in agreement. We watched as Batari hopped onto the back of Ashanti's Mirak, and then they scuttled away. Rikuri was right behind them, and she was also mounted atop an oversized ant. The rest of us bade farewell to the crowd of Chera women before we chased after the running ants. Even with our superhuman speed and agility, it was difficult to catch up with the Miraks, but they eventually came to a stop when we reached the wooden fence located near the stable house. Batari hopped off the Mirak, sauntered over to the fence, and leaned over it. Then she raised her hands up to her mouth to form a makeshift bullhorn.
Nalara!
She bellowed.
Come!
Off in the distance, one of the giant ants froze in place and turned its head curiously toward the sound. It then hopped back and forth like an excited puppy before it dashed over to the fence. The Mirak slid to a stop right in front of the gate, so Batari casually opened it up and stepped to the side. The ant scurried out of the pen, where Batari instantly gave it a scratch underneath its chin. Then the white-haired Chero walked to the beast's thorax, heaved her right leg over, and pulled herself onto its back.
Now, that's more like it.
Rikuri grinned.
Shall we?
Batari retorted with a smirk. And then the three mounted Chero women headed to the north.
Oh dear, George whispered to me telepathically. Will Tyrion and I need to carry you so we can keep up?
Yeah,
Tyrion grumbled.
Please let me know now so I can figure out how much stress I'll need to put my wings under.
Hey, guys, I called out to the rhino women. All three of them clicked their tongues and skidded to a halt. They then turned around and casually trotted back to us.
What's wrong, Draco Rex?
I know we want to get out there and kill this thing, but is there any way we could maybe slow down our pace for this trip? I know your Miraks are swift and have good stamina, but none of us necessarily do.
Your stamina seemed fine yesterday.
Batari cleared her throat. Yeah, but trying to keep up with your Miraks is going to very quickly take its toll on my crew. The last thing we need is to show up on the Scudawar's doorstep completely exhausted. We'll be dead before we can even get off our first assault.
Understandable.
The white-haired Chero woman nodded.
We'll instruct our Miraks to trot rather than gallop.
Thank you. That's going to go a very long way in helping out here. Did you hear that, guys?
We did.
Tyrion sighed with relief.
At least I only have to worry about carrying my own weight, even though that's still a whole lot. Don't be ridiculous.
George responded to the Silver Dragon's claim.
You are only half my size. If anyone's going to get tired out from lugging around their own weight, it'll be me. I think I may have eaten one boar too many at our last feast.
There is no such thing as too many boars,
Tyrion mused.
Oh, trust me, my friend.
The Water Dragon shuddered.
You say that now, but when your belly starts to look and feel like an oversized boulder, you will think differently.
So do we go on foot, then?
Jonas concluded.
We do,
I confirmed with a nod. The Chero women have agreed to take it slow so we can keep pace with them. So we began our journey to the place the Rhino women called the Hilly Plains, and the first major landmark we came across was the hill the Chero people saw as the perimeter to their land. We climbed it with ease, but found ourselves at a standstill when we arrived at its peak. It wasn't due to any danger or fear, though. It was because of the pure beauty of what stood before us. Cloud-brush trees were scattered across the grassy plains, like spots on a Dalmatian, with large, empty tracts of land between each one. Every now and again there would be a bush with wispy thin branches and berries so bright they could be seen all the way up here. The plains were covered with the same brownish-green grass as the rest of the island, but much longer, and this grass looked to be tall enough to reach our thighs as it blew in radiant waves in the breeze. There was also a small cluster of large, black creatures over on the northwest edge of the plains. There were only four that I could see, which was way smaller than most herds I'd seen before. And the way the creatures lumbered across the grasslands and stopped occasionally to munch on some of the greenery told me they were definitely gentle giants. As far as I could see, nothing in our immediate surroundings posed a threat.
It's beautiful,
Kendara gasped.
I've never seen anything like this before.
It is beautiful,
Rikuri nodded.
But it's not natural. The only reason it's like this is because there aren't enough animals grazing.
Batari added.
And they're only not grazing because of the Scudawar.
The Scudawar comes all the way out here?
Tyrion gulped.
Our sleeping spot is only a half mile down that way.
The Scudawar dwells in this area? I halfway voiced Tyrion's concern. Even though your village is, like, right there on the other side of the hill.
He doesn't come out this far.
Batari shook her head.
But it's close enough that the local prey animals stay away. It's not worth the risk for them. Which then means no predators or scavengers come out to this area either.
Which puts the whole ecosystem out of balance.
Kandara finished.
Then why don't you have your Mirax graze this land?
Mira suggested.
They could at least trim the grass down. That would be counterproductive.
Ashanti snorted.
Yeah, they could cut down the grass as good as a pack of widehorns, but we would then have to devote even more time and effort to watching them. They'd be beyond our territory, so we'd have to build up our village or expand it out here.
Exactly.
Batari sighed.
If there was an abundance of potential prey animals in this valley again, the predators would return. Which means we'd have to set up a perimeter of guard huts around the valley, which means we'd need them all the way over on the other side as well. That's far too close to the Scudawar's territory for my comfort.
We marveled at the beauty of the valley for a few minutes more, before we started our descent. It only took us 10 minutes to make it down the other side of the small hill, and then we were swallowed up by the tall grass. Since they were still atop their giant ants, the Chera women were perfectly fine. The grass came up about halfway on the Mirax bodies, so the oversized insects had to raise their heads a bit to see out over the terrain. But the only part of the grass that touched the rhino women were a few blades that brushed at the bottom of their feet. George was now practically fully grown, so he towered above the grass like a scaly blue elephant. Tyrion was much smaller, but his long neck allowed him to look out above the grass as if he were a submarine telescope. The rest of us weren't so lucky. The blades of the dry, thin grass brushed past my leg as we began through the plains, accompanied by the sound of the foliage as it crunched and crinkled beneath my boots. Nima and all of us dragonkin didn't have much of an issue managing the grass, as it only came up to about our thighs. The other three women were a bit shorter, though, so they each took their own approach to navigating the tall grass. Kandara fluttered her emerald wings as she rose up into the air and hovered just a few feet above the grass. Nadir and Lazan, on the other hand, took the path of least resistance. Both of the Kunag women readied their stone axes, gave each other a playful smirk, and then began to swing their weapons out in front of them. The axes acted like machetes, so clumps of grass flew up into the air as it was severed from its roots. The plains before us were vast and amorphous, and I was beyond thankful we had the Chera women along to guide us. As vibrant and beautiful as the land might have been, it was also confusing as fuck. Everything looked the same, down to the shape of the trees and bushes, and the way the sun shone down onto the grass. In fact, if it weren't for the location of the sun in the sky, I didn't think I would have had any idea where we were going. My crew and the Chera women marched on until, eventually, we heard a deep, loud growl that seemed to shake the entire landscape around us. My heart hammered inside my chest as I drew my sea glass sword out from its sheath. Was this the Scudawar? If it was, we were royally fucked. There was no cover anywhere around us, and we were currently standing in the middle of a giant bowl. It could come at us from any angle it wanted, and we'd be completely helpless when it did.
What was that?
Anora gasped.
Are we under attack?
Maybe there's something in the grass.
Mira offered, as she held her spear at the ready.
Something that's stalking us under the cover of foliage.
You may all relax.
George's telepathic voice chuckled.
It's just my stomach.
Instantly, Mira and I both slumped our shoulders and breathed a sigh of relief. Oh, it's just George's belly, I announced with a laugh. Everybody can take it easy.
Oh, sorry, dear one.
The blue-scaled water dragon continued.
Apparently all of the food I consumed last night was not as fulfilling as I had thought.
Tambori's tusks.
Batari grumbled.
We didn't even think of bringing any rations that could satisfy the hunger of a dragon.
Don't worry about it, I reassured the Chero woman. I saw a small herd of creatures not too far from here. If you don't mind taking a little break, we could just let George go snatch one of those up, and then we could keep going.
There's no need.
Ashanti suddenly interjected.
Batari, Rikuri, do you remember why these plains used to be so popular with our land dragons?
Rikuri's dark eyes lit up at whatever association she'd just been given, And at the same time, Batari's thin lips twisted up into a longing smile.
Harry berries. I haven't even thought of those for several season cycles. I have! I've been thinking about those things in my dreams. There's been more than one time I was even tempted to ride out here and pick some, but I came to my senses before I actually did. What's a hairy berry?
Daria questioned.
It is the pride and joy of the Windy Plains.
Ashanti noted.
A berry that only grows along these parts here. A berry that is somehow so filling it can keep a full-grown dragon sustained for a full day.
A berry? Are you trying to tell me a simple berry can fill a dragon's belly?
That's exactly what I'm saying.
The woman with three horns retorted.
Though they're difficult to find without the nose of a land dragon to sniff them out.
Speak for yourself, Ashanti.
Rikuri snorted.
I used to be a pro at finding those things. All you have to do is look for a bush whose branches are drooping a bit more than usual. That's an old shaman's tale.
You say that.
Rikuri shot back without missing a beat.
But who's the one who was always able to find them without her dragon by her side?
Ugh, I still think you cheated.
The three-horned chero huffed.
For the last time, it's not cheating to know something that gives you an advantage, no matter how much you tell yourself it might be.
Ashanti's eyes narrowed as she placed a finger against her largest horn, and then dragged it upward with a huff. Rikuri let out a gasp at the gesture before she attempted to repeat it against her stump of a missing horn.
No need for vulgarity, ladies.
Batari warned.
Rikuri, if you truly feel you can help us find those berries, please do so. If not, we need to keep moving.
Oh, I'll find them, all right. Just give me a little time to find the bush.
That could take forever. The bushes on the Windy Plains are so spread out it would take hours to search for each and every one.
We don't have that kind of time.
Batari shook her head.
It's dangerous enough for us to try and fight the Scudoar during the day. It would be even more impossible come nightfall.
Perhaps George should just eat one of those creatures you saw.
Nadir suggested.
It would be way simpler, and Lazan and I would love to help him hunt them down.
Those berries sound more important, though. Think about it. If they're really the size of a regular berry, we could literally carry around a full day's rations for the entire crew inside of our pockets. And if we could ever get to the point where we could harvest these things, we would be set for life.
That's a good point.
Mira noted, before she turned back to the Chero women.
Why haven't you tried to take one of these bushes and move it inside your territory?
That would never work.
Batari shook her head.
This is the only place on the entire island with the ideal conditions for a hairy berry bush to grow.
What exactly makes this spot ideal for the berries? Because there's probably some way we could replicate the conditions back on our home island.
I've never really thought about that. I've always thought it was because of the gusty winds that blow down into the valley, but none of my people really have the knowledge nor the spare time to figure out why this spot's so special. Either way,
Ashanti interjected.
We don't have the time to mull about looking for berries. I want to kill this thing and go home.
That was when it dawned on me. Even though the bushes that could potentially be hairy berry bushes were spread out far, we had an ace in the hole to get around that. We had eyes in the sky. How would you like to ride something other than a Murak, Rikuri? I offered the hornless woman.
Isn't that a bit formal?
The dark-haired rhino woman looked at me with a puzzled expression.
We just met, and I'm sure you're not fully recovered from your night with Batari yesterday.
That's not what I meant. I was talking about Tyrion. You can ride Tyrion up into the air and then search for the hairy berry bushes from above.
Oh, I suppose this might just work. It's certainly not as fun as the other sort of riding, especially when it comes to Ben. Can you confirm that, Batari?
Ashanti teased.
Careful now,
the Queen Mother retorted with a smug grin.
You know that what happens in the Fertility Hut does not leave the Fertility Hut. How would I know?
Ashanti shrugged.
We've quite literally never used it before.
I'll ride the Silver Dragon. If it's all right with him, of course.
I literally carried four of you guys down hundreds of feet.
Tyrion snickered.
I think I can handle a single Chero woman.
He says it's fine. I translated.
It's been so long since I've ridden on a dragon.
Rikuri dismounted her Murak and whispered something to her aunt as she scratched behind its antenna. Then she turned toward Tyrion and cautiously approached the adolescent dragon with her eyes narrowed and her hand held out in front of her.
What's she doing?
Tyrion chuffed. I think she thinks you're dangerous, I noted via our dragon bond link. So she wants to approach you with caution.
I'm actually offended. What have I done to make her think I'm dangerous? I'm a lovable goofball.
Maybe it was the fact that your breath can literally burn a whole ship to the ground. Or that their only real interaction with you has been when you were disintegrating their arrows and fighting one-on-one with the deadly spotted hound.
It wasn't one-on-one, though. It was George and me.
He won't bite, I promised Rukuri. I know Tyrion's a fierce, fire-breathing dragon, but he's completely harmless when he's around us.
I'll believe it when I see it,
Rukuri harumphed.
I've been around enough fire-breathing dragons to know just how dangerous they can be. Nice dragon. Good dragon.
This lady can't be serious.
Tyrion looked at me with a hint of annoyance on his face. I just shrugged. Finally, Rikuri's hand touched Tyrion's neck, and then the rhino woman gently patted the dragon.
There we go. You wouldn't want to hurt the girl trying to get you food, would you?
Of course not. Can you believe what you're seeing, Ben? I'm honestly kind of offended. What if I...
Tyrion's anger quickly turned to joy when Rikuri found the sweet spot on his chin. The dragon's mouth spread into a toothy grin as his eyes closed, and his right back leg began to thump against the ground rapidly. See? He already likes you.
I wouldn't go that far, but my opinion is changing by the minute.
Rikuri scratched Tyrion for a minute more before she walked up to his body, hesitated, and threw her leg up around his neck. The Chero woman then positioned herself as if she were riding a horse, held on to the scales on his ears, and then let out a whistle. Tyrion pushed himself off the ground and expanded his wings about 10 feet into his ascent. Tyrion and Rikuri flew up into the still morning sky, and then broke off horizontally once they were a few hundred feet up into the air. The dragon hovered in place for a few solid minutes before he finally communicated their findings.
She believes she sees a hariberry bush. I would fly us down to inspect.
The silver dragon turned downward and then zipped down to the ground and landed somewhere off in the distance, beyond our line of sight.
You can't find hariberry bushes just by looking at them,
Ashanti grumbled to herself.
That's the most ridiculous thing I ever heard.
Soon we saw Tyrion's winged figure pop back up into the sky, and it flew to the east for a while before it swooped down again. A few minutes later, the dragon and the Chero returned to the sky, but this time they moved west before they darted down to the ground in search of the elusive berries.
Perhaps they've all died off. If the natural order of the whole area isn't in sync, then it wouldn't surprise me if the berries weren't exactly thriving.
That's not it.
Ashanti shook her head.
Rikuri's just full of Whitehorn poo. She's not finding any because she doesn't know how.
Suddenly, Tyrion and Rikuri shot back up into the air, and then slowly fluttered back down to the ground before us. The long blades of grass were forced downward from the gusts of air from Tyrion's wings, almost like we were watching a landing helicopter. And once the dragon and his rider were back on the ground, Rikuri leapt off Tyrion's back and landed gracefully in the grass. The dark-haired Chero woman had a large smile on her face as she approached, and in her arms were a small pile of bright yellow and red berries.
I come bearing gifts,
Rikuri chuckled.
No,
Ashanti gasped, and her eyes went wide with disbelief.
How did you... I told you,
Rikuri winked.
You just have to find the bushes that are slightly more droopy than the rest.
Ashanti crossed her arms across her chest, sat back in her mount, and scowled. I could tell she didn't want to give Rikuri the satisfaction of victory, but the Chero woman had just been given a whole lot of crow to eat. Rikuri walked to the center of our crew and then began to distribute the berries out to all of us.
Everybody take one. It'll keep you sustained for the rest of the journey, if not longer. Your dragon should both take one as well.
I took the red and yellow berry from Rikuri, studied it for a second, and then popped it into my mouth. The berry was much tougher than I anticipated, so when I bit down on the flesh of the fruit, my teeth crunched against its leathery skin 2 or 3 more times before I punctured its exterior. There wasn't any sort of juice inside the berry. Instead, its meat remained attached to its skin to form a sort of strange taffy-like food. It took me a few seconds to fully chomp down the berry into a more digestible size, and then I swallowed it down in a single gulp. Its flavor was horrifically bitter, to the point where it made my face scrunch up in response. Still, it had a soft hint of sweetness to it, and my taste buds felt like they were being pulled back and forth between two ends of the flavor spectrum, like a hoppy beer. Most importantly, the thing was already feeling heavy inside my stomach, and I wasn't even sure if it was down there yet.
Whoa,
Zarya declared, as she rubbed her belly and elbowed her twin.
It feels like I just finished 3 plates of Ali's feast.
You're telling me,
Nima added.
I'm already starting to feel full, and I've only had one. I wouldn't recommend eating more than one,
Rikuri warned as she popped a berry into her mouth.
The last thing you want right now is to go into battle completely overgorged.
Once we were all finished with the berries, Kandara slipped them into the satchel that contained the wind dragon egg. Then we set off once more with our bellies full and our spirits high. Finally, we came to the northernmost part of the plains, where we were greeted with another large hill. When we came to its bottom, all three of the Chera women stopped and stared up at its height.
This is it,
Batari muttered.
Once we go beyond this hill, we'll be in the territory of the Scudawar. This is our last chance to turn back, should that be what we decide to do.
No way,
Ashanti declared.
I'm tired of our people living in fear of this monster. The only way I'm going back to that village is either dead or with the monster's head in my hands. What about the rest of you?
Batari asked my crew.
Do you still wish to proceed?
We all gave her a cautious nod, and the Chera woman sighed. We need to hatch our egg, and if that means killing the Scudawar, then that's what we're going to do.
Then we shall proceed,
the Queen Mother said with a trembling lip.
Yeah!
The Mirax marched forward with me and my crew in close pursuit. We scaled the side of the hill in no time at all, and what we saw on the other side was the polar opposite of where we'd just come from. The wetlands looked like death. The sky was somewhat darkened by the clouds that hung over it, and the grass of the plains were all dead. Dozens of giant lakes were spread across the landscape, though they seemed eerily still. There weren't any cloud brushes at all over here, nor were there many bushes. Off in the distance, all the way to the north of our position, were several hills rising out of the landscape. Those are the hilly plains, I'm assuming? I pointed to the edge of the wetlands.
That would be it.
Batari nodded.
That will be your dragon egg can hatch.
It looks so dead,
Kandara muttered, as she looked around at the land before us.
Thank the Scudawar for that,
Ashanti huffed.
The wetlands used to be filled with all sorts of animals who came here to cool off from the heat or get a drink. But thanks to Big Dumb and Spiny, everything spiraled downwards.
Where is the Scudawar anyway? I thought you said he was huge, yet I'm not seeing anything.
He's hiding,
Rikuri warned.
Whatever we do, we need to proceed with caution.
Hiding where? I couldn't help but be skeptical. There's nowhere for him to... Right on cue, the ground began to rumble and shake, and off in the distance, a spot on the ground shifted and started to rise, as if something were trying to claw its way out. Dead grass and soft earth fell away from the bulge as it swelled, until eventually the head of a hideous creature broke through. The rest of the creature's body was not far behind, and it was equally as gargantuan. The whole thing stood at least 30 feet tall, and it had the frame of a frickin' gorilla. It had the thick muscles, the extra-wide shoulders, and even the strange knuckle-walking posture. But instead of black or silver fur, the Scudawar was covered from head to toe in leathery, tan skin full of wrinkles and blemishes. His entire back, on the other hand, was covered with a massive layer of thick, spiny hair that appeared to have several barbs all over their length. That's him, I breathed, when I finally saw the beast in all its glory.
It is,
Rikuri confirmed, though I heard a bit of a tremble in her voice. We're going to need a plan, and we're going to need it now.